Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Elena Delozier, a research fellow in the Bernstein Program on Gulf and Energy Policy at the Washington Institute. Elena, some people say there is a ceasefire in Yemen. They call it a major accomplishment, saying it shows a possible softening of the sides to the country's five-year civil war. But according to some of your recent writing, you seem to think otherwise, that there is no real ceasefire because the Iran-backed Houthis have not agreed to one. What's more, you say a so-called vision that the Shiite rebels have put forth for a final settlement in the country is more a wish list. Explain, please.
Thank you so much for having me. The ceasefire in Yemen is a one-sided ceasefire, what we call a unilateral ceasefire. So the Saudis and the Houthi government have decided to do this one-sided ceasefire, and the Houthis have not signed up to it. And so there is a ceasefire happening, but it's just on only one side of the conflict. This has happened before in the opposite way. So the Houthis did a unilateral ceasefire last fall. They agreed to stop sending projectiles into Saudi Arabia. So their ceasefire was toward Saudi Arabia, not in Yemen proper. And the Saudis did not agree publicly to that ceasefire, but there was a de-escalation between the two parties over the course of a couple of months. And so unilateral ceasefires are designed as basically a test for the other party. So you come out and say, I will stop fighting, in hopes that the other side will also feel international and political pressure to stop fighting as well. And so whether this will work, time will tell. The reason that the Houthis say that they don't want to sign on to the ceasefire is in part because they want the economic blockade lifted in Yemen. So there's a sea, land, and air blockade in Yemen that the Saudi-led coalition controls. And so that's something that the Houthis want lifted before they claim they will agree to a ceasefire. The wish list that they released the other day, they called it a vision for the end of the war, but it really was a wish list. And it does have language on a ceasefire, which is pretty standard language. And then the second section of it is about the blockade. And so they are tying those two things together. And a number of the things about lifting the blockade are things that the UN has tried to push forward, like opening the airport, things like that, as confidence building measures. The third section of the document is then the political plan. And there isn't much there. I mean, that section of the document's only about a half a page. The interesting thing about their wish list is it really is a wish list. It's everything that if they could get everything they wanted, this is it. So it's really a starting point for negotiations. It does sort of require the Saudis to capitulate a bit, which I don't think that they will be willing to do. But again, it at least gives us a sense of what the Houthis, maximalist position is.
You are listening to Elena Delozier, a research fellow in the Bernstein Program on Gulf and Energy Policy at the Washington Institute. In a separate piece just published in Foreign Policy, you say that nevertheless the coronavirus pandemic could be, pardon the phrase, just what the doctor ordered, that it could ultimately be the bridge to talks. In what way do you mean this?
So the idea is that coronavirus really creates these very unusual conditions. Something like coronavirus doesn't choose sides in a war. And because it's a bit of an invisible enemy, it would be really hard to fight in Yemen, especially if the parties to the war were not cooperating in some way in a mediation strategy. And so the idea is that the need for some sort of mediation strategy against coronavirus in Yemen, that will be a need. If coronavirus breaks out in Yemen in any way, and it already has, there's one case that's been noted in the south. I suspect that there are others. I suspect over the next few weeks, we might start to see more cases pop up. And as that starts to happen, there's a need for a mediation strategy against the virus. And that will require the parties to cooperate with each other. And the point is, and it's not just me saying this, the UN is saying this, it's not just me, but the idea is that if the parties have to work together to deal with the coronavirus, that might then create the conditions under which those talks could expand into potentially peace talks. So that's the hope, is that, you know, of course, first of all, we all hope that coronavirus does not come to Yemen in the way that it's come to other countries. But regardless, there needs to be some sort of mitigation strategy. And so the parties coming together to talk about that might provide an opportunity to talk about other issues as well. That's the idea.
Over the weekend, a Houthi court sentenced four journalists to death for supposedly spying on behalf of the Hadi government and the Saudi-led coalition that is backing it. Doesn't this show a hardening by the Houthis?
The four journalists who were convicted in a Houthi court were detained in 2015, and I think it's really important to bring that to light. And the reason is because for those folks who don't follow Yemen on a day-to-day basis, they may either not know or have forgotten that there were a lot of people detained and disappeared, and these journalists were part of that roundup. So the war started in March 2015, and in the weeks and the months following, there were just thousands of people, politicians, activists, journalists, who were detained in Sana'a and its regional areas, either detained or disappeared. And those people form the basis of these really long prisoner lists. And so the Hadi government and the Houthis are negotiating, you know, with the UN on prisoner releases. And the lists of prisoners that the Hadi government once released include a lot of these people who are detained and disappeared. I think it's possible that these journalists were on those lists. Sana'a has been increasingly operating over, say, the last year and a half or so as a police state. Just a number of things have been put in place that kind of give it that characteristic. So there have been a lot more trials and convictions lately. So a couple of weeks ago, some folks from the Baha'i were convicted, and they were ultimately let go after some mediation efforts. And I'm hopeful that similar mediation efforts might be able to help these journalists as well. But I think it's also important for us to remember that there are thousands of people detained and disappeared from that 2015 period. And I think the story of these journalists helps us bring that to light again.
Elena Delogier, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.